I wrote a blog about this a couple of years ago, and it was featured on thedailylove.com because I have been studying the work of Marshall Rosenberg, who created something called nonviolent communication. Before I explain about shoulding, let me tell you a little bit about Marshall and a little bit about nonviolent communication. This book had come into my life several years ago by a friend who had said that after he read it, he actually learned something. And he's a very good reader, and he's read lots of different self-help books, and he's a guru of sorts as well. So for him to say that this book actually was really enlightening, it definitely piqued my interest. But at the time when it was recommended to me, again, the title is Nonviolent Communication, the first thing I kept thinking is I don't see myself as a violent communicator. So I wasn't interested in the book. It didn't pique my interest past that conversation, for the very fact is that I did not see myself as a violent communicator. And I just felt like somehow picking up the book was a reflection of me acknowledging that I had violent communication skills. I actually don't remember exactly why it came back into my life. Oh, it must have been my relationship. It must have been somewhere in the start of my marriage that the book resurfaced in my mind and finally propelled me to get the book. I've known people that have taken Marshall Rosenberg's workshops in the past and have said very good things about it. But again, I was still really hung up on the whole idea of the title of nonviolent communication. So when I saw that there were some workshops being given nearby, I signed up for one and drove up to Santa Barbara to take my first all-day communication with compassion, or actually, I think it was called Compassionate Communication Workshop with an NVC trainer. That stands for Nonviolent Communication. And there are hundreds of trainers all over the world that facilitate the work of Marshall Rosenberg. So nonviolent communication is what I consider to be one of the most valuable, simplistic, necessary works out there about communication and emotion. And I'm going to be interviewing some of the practitioners, actually some of the practitioners that I've learned from directly, as well as probably others in the future, directly about nonviolent communication so I can share the work with you. But what I'll say is this. There is a great need for a rebrand, not necessarily for Marshall's work and his trainers, but for my work with this work, for me sharing this information with you. And it's one of the pieces of information that has inspired me to write another book and incorporate the teachings of Marshall into a new way of thinking about and looking at our feelings, our needs, and how we communicate with each other and how we get our needs met. It's so simple and it's so important. And I would take that whole book and literally just take a new title on it, because I know that someone out there is going to feel like I did and think, I don't want to read it because I don't really think I'm a violent communicator. I don't yell. I don't get angry. And that's really not what it's about. Now, with that said, there are subtle ways that we do have violent communication, that we have sort of angry, shaming, blaming, guilt-tripping communication. There's an underlying passive-aggressive, if you will, way that we talk to people and manipulate people in order to get our needs met. And the unfortunate thing is that most of the time, people are not aware of that. They're not aware that they're manipulating others to get their needs met because they haven't been taught this information or made aware or are even conscious of their own needs. And that's so important about this work. So I look forward to bringing you a few shows in the near future with the trainers I worked with about nonviolent communication. But what we're going to concentrate on today is the word should. Marshall Rosenberg states that should is the most violent word we use. Now, when you think of violence, you think of probably killing and guns shooting and people hitting each other. And that's probably what you think of when it comes to violent. But think of it when it comes to energetically. How I talk to you. What vibration am I putting out? What expectation? What's the underlying feeling of when I'm speaking to you that you're picking up on? Now, first I have to mention that you are not responsible for how someone else receives what you say. If you're a caring communicator, you're going to want to know your audience and pick your words based on who your audience is. And if they seem to not understand what it is you're trying to say, and you can usually tell that by the body language, or you can ask, did you understand what I said? What could you repeat back to me what you heard me say? If someone is receiving what you're saying in a negative or misinterpreted way, then as a conscious, caring communicator, you can always try to say it in a different way. But it isn't your responsibility when someone else is triggered. That trigger is in them. So I'm just going to sort of put that out of the way so that people don't feel like they have the right to say to someone, you hurt my feelings, especially when it's when it's not intended, because most people don't set out to hurt your feelings. Feelings getting hurt is usually interpreted when you have some wound or trigger or belief that someone sort of just brushes up against lightly and you go, ouch. It isn't that person, and they may not even meant it in the same way that you're receiving it. They might have meant it in a completely different way. In fact, I think I'm now remembering why I picked up this work, because I was having, as most marriages in the early stages, as well as other relationships, other family and friendships in my life, people don't always understand exactly what the other person is saying, and we all leave it up for interpretation. Just because someone says something doesn't mean that the person who's hearing it understands it exactly the way you meant it. So getting back to the word should. Should is the most violent word we use because it is imposing on someone else the idea that we know better than them and that they don't have a choice. The word should indicates that they don't have a choice, that they're making the wrong decision. That's the underlying message when you say, you should do this. Again, ways in which that can be interpreted: I know better than you. You don't know what you're talking about. You've made the wrong decision. You aren't allowed to make a different decision. I'm right and you're wrong. That's what's coming across when we use the word should. Now, the word should is it's in our language everywhere. We use it all the time. And you may say, well, but I don't mean it that way. And you might not mean it that way. So then what do we do about that? Well, we can find another word. We can find another phrase, because you may not mean it that way, but that might trigger somebody else. And while, again, you're not responsible for their trigger, you'll lose the connection with them as well as the conversation and the point that you're trying to make when we're using words that really indicate a shame or a guilt. Should is kind of shaming. It really does say, I know better than you. And when it comes to conversations, most people will stop listening when you tell them that you know better than them. So when it comes to compassionate communication, should would be a word I would recommend that we try to eliminate from our vocabulary. Because again, it just sets up sort of an undercurrent of anger. And even though it might be delivered with a smile on your face, that doesn't mean someone isn't having judgment about you. And the word should definitely indicates judgment. And for some people, the more secure you are, the more your wounds have been healed and you are centered within yourself, somebody saying should to you won't trigger you. You'll just brush it off. You'll notice that they're judging you. You'll even notice that they are negatively judging you, but you won't care because it doesn't matter. Because hopefully by that point, you'll realize that anyone judging you is their issue, not yours. But in the meantime, if you're working on healing your wounds, let's discuss some of the ways we can get rid of the word should, because it's too commonly used. And I would guess that most of us don't mean to use it in the way that it actually gets used. But before we get to how to remove it, what can we replace it with, let's take a break to thank our sponsors. So now you're probably thinking, I use that word a lot. And you probably are thinking, and I don't mean it in that judgmental way. And I'm going to believe you and say, of course you don't necessarily consciously think you don't mean it in the condescending, negative, judgmental way. But think about it for a second. There's a situation where, let's say, even in my business, I definitely know from me, if I've looked at clients or friends or family and they're doing something that I see a way that could be more efficient, I absolutely, in my mind, will think, why are you doing it that way? There's a better way. You should do it the way I would tell you to do it. And I've had to learn how not to do that and to allow others their process and to respect that they're, if they want to know my opinion, they will ask. Because I know I'm sensitive sometimes to when others decide that they want to give me their opinion when I haven't asked. So it's a practice of self-respect as well as respect of others to start to eliminate the word should. So let's talk about it from the place of I first. When using it on yourself, because we definitely shame ourselves on a regular basis by using the word should. Oh, I should work out. I should eat better. I should commit to the gym. I shouldn't do that. And that's all very shaming. And hopefully you can feel the energy in shame. It's bad. It's low. It's not inspirational. It doesn't inspire me to change it. I feel bad. My energy feels judged and I feel smaller. I don't feel high sense of energy and decision making. I feel badly about myself or my decisions or my behavior. And all that judging keeps you stuck. And when it comes to exercise and fitness and weight loss and healthcare, self-care of your healthcare, shoulding will keep you stuck. Shoulding will keep you shamed. And who wants to feel bad? And you'll start to associate all of the good, wonderful habits of self-care, exercise, eating well, cooking, therapy, coaching, stress management, all of the things that you want to do, you really do want to do them because you want the result that they give to you. If you should yourself into doing them, then your association with them becomes about negative. It reinforces that negative feeling of shame that you're not good enough, that you're not doing the right things. And so for self-care to work, we have to be acknowledging and appreciating and grateful and energetically supportive of the choices that we make. And so when it comes to your mind and what you're telling yourself and how you talk to yourself, both out loud and in your mind, my recommendation would be to start replacing should with want. Now, you're probably thinking, well, but what if I don't want to do it? What if I don't want to go to the gym? What if I don't want to eat well? What if I don't want to go on a better, healthier diet for my lifestyle? Well, then you don't want to. Then stop the conversation there because the shoulding isn't working. And if the shoulding is working for you, I would evaluate sort of how that makes you feel, what feelings come up for you when you complete your self-care routine that you shoulded yourself into. Do you feel accomplished and good and whole and like you've given yourself a big hug? Or do you feel like you've completed the task and now the demons can be quiet? When it comes to being successful in the relationship with yourself and your body, try to replace should with want, and you're just going to say it until it manifests into energy and inspiration. I promise if you try it for 1 week that you will shift your relationship with self-care. Now, let's talk about shoulding for others. Shoulding, when it comes to shoulding for others, the first issue that comes up is that it's very controlling, it's very bossy, and it's very know-it-all. And when you tell someone else what they should do, especially when they didn't ask, this is an indication that there might be some issue with control, controlling others, controlling circumstances. And if you've been listening to the show at all or for a while, we did a show last week called Understanding and Healing Addiction. And the addiction to controlling your behavior and others is an addiction. Al-Anon, AA, all the rehab programs would tell you that focusing on the other person's behavior is the reason why you feel the way you feel, and it's as much an addiction as the person with the, let's say, substance abuse, because you're using their behavior as your reason to feel bad while they're using substances. You focusing on their behavior as your excuse to complain or to worry is also taking you out of your life. It's blocking you from dealing with you. So when it comes to shooting others, maybe try some of these phrases. The first phrase I would recommend would be, you might want to consider, or ask some questions before you start with a should. So for instance, you're giving someone a piece of advice because you're feeling like they really want it. They're interested in your information. I do this with a few friends whom I'm sensitive to. I don't want to should them. And I've listened to them tell me a story about something, and I'll start off by saying, would it be okay if I share some thoughts with you? And at that point, they get to say yes or no. And then, of course, they'll come back and say, well, you don't have to ask me, just tell me. But that's only a few friends. There's some friends that don't tell me things anymore because I used to tell them what to do, or I used to tell them what would be a better idea, because in my mind, I'm a problem solver. Well, the problem with being a problem solver is unless someone's asking you, it's none of your business. So I had to learn that the hard way, and some people haven't learned that yet. And so hopefully this show is inspiring you to just be conscious and pay attention to how you're talking to yourself and how you're talking to others. Should is a violent word. And I know for some of you, you're going to say, but I don't need it that way. I don't use it like that. I don't feel violent. I'm not really angry. That's fine. But in terms of Marshall Rosenberg's work, and I'm sure there's been other research on the word, but for now, know that whether you may not hear it in a offensive way or in a shaming way, a lot of other people will, especially anyone who's ever been told by a teacher or a parent or a sibling or a friend that they're not good enough, that they're not smart enough, that they make bad decisions, that anything like that is going to be a deep wound that when someone else shoulds you and tells you what to do could trigger shame. And could trigger anger, especially if they want to rebel against that mother, father, teacher figure that decided to put their own agenda on the person. So should. Maybe let's make a decision together to take it out of our language and start to be conscious of when we're using it and how we're using it and why we're using it. Because really, when you do use it, when you're giving advice to someone, aren't you really saying, I know better than you? Aren't you really saying this would be best? It's a really hard lesson to learn for those of us that are rescuers. I would like to think I'm a recovered rescuer with all the work I've been doing and allowing people their process and offering that I'm here when they're ready and allowing them to not use the advice or not ask or just to let it be. And it's a process. So to wrap up our show on shoulding, let's just think about when you're talking to yourself, notice how many times you say it inside your head and what comes out of your mouth when it comes to you. And evaluate whether or not it's really working for you. Obviously, one of the books I'd recommend would be Marshall Rosenberg's Nonviolent Communication. But even more than the book, the CDs. I've had the CDs for at least 8 years because the audio is easier to listen in some ways. And he tells stories and the stories are in the book and that's fine. But the book and the audio, they're exactly the same, are really powerful communication tools that can actually help you live the life that you want to live and learn how to get your needs met. This is not going to be the last time you're going to hear about this subject, I promise you. But Nonviolent Communication, Marshall Rosenberg. Also, I would recommend that you read Brené Brown's second book, which is Gifts of Imperfection. She was a shame researcher. And again, going through that book and taking some notes and doing the processes in that book can help uncover the reasons why you might be dealing with shame and then projecting it onto others. Because that's usually what happens, is that when we have things going on with us, we see the world through our lens and think that everyone else does too. And everyone else doesn't. They have their own lens colored by their own experience. And while we do all share the same anger, joy, love, we have the same ability to have these emotions, we absolutely do not interpret things the same way. So I invite you to join me on the journey of releasing the word should from the vocabulary, unless it's in a joking manner, and replacing it with healthier, more allowing, more respectful words that honor you and me and where we are and what we want and the fact that we get to make our own decisions about anything that we want anytime for the rest of our lives, period.